Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Food Lovers Elective, where we discuss food on and beyond the dinner table. The Food Lovers Elective is a program of the Center for Regional Agriculture, Food and Transformation, or CRAFT, at Chatham University's Falk School of Sustainability and Environment. CRAFT's mission is to foster a transformative regional food system that is equitable, sustainable, and inclusive in Western Pennsylvania and beyond. Today, we have a guest. Gabe Tylove. Joining us to talk about homegrown and the introduction of homegrown and how it has grown. So thank you so much for coming, Gabe. How are you doing?
Doing great, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. So we're going to go ahead and get into some questions. And so to start, can you tell us a little bit about homegrown and your role with the program?
Sure, yeah, I'd be happy to. So homegrown, at its essence, is a backyard raised bed garden installation program. So it's different than school gardens, it's different than community gardens. These are gardens primarily in people's backyard spaces, so they're personal gardens. We install two raised bed gardens for every participant, unless they have sort of an extra small space. And we support those new gardeners over 2 years as they become self-sufficient, in tending to and managing those spaces. The primary reason that we have the program is around increasing fresh food access. But then also for us, there's the co-benefit, it may be equal benefit of sort of instilling or sort of supporting a love of gardening, because outside of fresh fruit access, we also think just the habit of gardening is a great one and has a variety of other sort of health and wellness benefits.
Well, yeah, because you said that a lot of these gardens are in places that, fresh food isn't necessarily always accessible.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So we do work in areas that are sort of considered USDA food deserts. I guess for me, there's a few reasons that fresh food isn't accessible. One of them is geography. When you talk about food deserts, I think that the first thing that comes to mind is sort of physical distance from a full service grocery store. The USDA does look at that. They also look at personal vehicle access. Something might be relatively close, but if there's a low vehicle access or bad public transportation, it can be challenging to access those places. But I think the other component, which is worth noting, is just pure economics. Even if there was a full service grocery store next door to someone, you have to consider that fresh food isn't always the best investment from a calorie per dollar perspective. If you're going to spend a lot of money, not get a lot of calories, and if you don't use it in time, it can spoil. And so people on tight food budgets, sort of regardless of their sort of physical access to a full service grocery store, oftentimes do leave it off of their shopping list for that reason. Those are the things we think about when we think about fresh food access.
Awesome. Thank you. And also just like the time it takes to cook it, like prepared food is also so much faster to eat. And so like if you have to take a bus to get to a grocery store and, then you have to go home and cook the food. Like I know that, greens don't necessarily take that long, but if you want to cook, it's Brussels sprout season. So if you go home and you want to cook Brussels sprouts, you have to have, 30, 40 minutes to dedicate. And that's just to put it in the oven.
That's absolutely true.
So definitely being able to like have time to cook it is also an issue when transit is also involved. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. How have your past experiences with connecting people to nature through education and outreach prepared you for homegrown?
So I guess I didn't answer the first part of your last question, which is my role. I'll circle back. I'm the director of adult education and community outreach. And so in that role, I helped launch homegrown in 2013. the whole, for the entirety of the length of the program, we've had a full-time program coordinator who manages the day-to-day of the program, but I help fundraise for the program and help direct, the program, in a variety of ways. But my world is split. We've got our homegrown program, but we also do a wide variety of, environmental education, garden education, adult education programs, all, through the Botanic Garden, and all with the sort of goal of connecting people more closely to the natural world. And I think that some of the things that make homegrown so appealing, sort of with that experience, is that it is a direct connection. You can talk about gardening all day, and there are interesting gardening topics, but, really people are responsive to that direct, tangible sensory experience. And so, one of the things I like about homegrown is, there's not a lot of, you don't need to take a year of classes in order to get a garden. You just get a garden. And I think pretty quickly get your hands in the soil and begin to sort of that tactile relationship with the natural world. And I think that's the thing that's the most persuasive. You might be interested in growing fresh veggies, but pretty quickly you realize just the act of gardening, the experience of gardening, puts you in direct relationship with the natural world in a way that, even looking at it doesn't do.
Or reading
about it doesn't do, or watching, clips about it doesn't do. And so sort of cutting to the chase and getting to that one-on-one direct tactile connection to nature, to the natural world, to plants, is something that I think makes this program special, and is what we also try to do in other programs as well, is sort of, we'll talk about gardening, but let's get into it a little bit, because that's where people really open up and become much more emotionally connected when they get sort of outside of their brains and into their hands.
Yeah, I would actually tend to agree with that, because I feel like there's also a special relationship that people can have. I don't know how many people in their daily lives go out and, touch dirt, mm-hmm. For lack of a better way to say it. And when you are out there and you're actually putting your hands in the soil and you're, feeling where the food actually comes from, I feel like that definitely is a special relationship that, I think that something special that homegrown is also able to do is it's in an urban area. Like, I've only lived in Pittsburgh for a few months, and I mean, there are considerably more trees and, green spaces than in other areas that I've lived before. But I feel like if you are not actively able to, go out and, put your hands in soil, I think that that's a really special relationship too, especially in an urban area.
I completely agree. And I would just add on to that to say, apart from access in an urban setting, there's also a number of other challenges, especially related to lead or other heavy metal contamination in urban soils. And so, frankly, in a lot of urban spaces in Pittsburgh, it's not advisable just to stick your hands in the soil, especially if you're a young child. But even for adults, it's really, it's sort of advised against as a public health best practice. And so, that is another thing that we liked, the ability to come in with raised beds and bring in clean soil that we can sort of confidently say, yeah, dig your hands in, is something that not every, a lot of people don't have access to. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that that's really special. So thank you for that answer. And my next question is, what have you learned about community since being a part of homegrown, and how has your relationship definition to community changed?
Yeah. So very early on, at sort of the outset of the program, we did a lot of proposal writing, grant writing, and I can remember very explicitly in those early drafts, talking a lot about the role that this program would play in building community. The idea was, gardens do get people outside talking, which is nice. I know when I'm out in my garden, I talk to a lot more of my neighbors than I would otherwise. We talked about the classes we would run and we have run that, would introduce new people to each other. And all of those things are true of gardening. So I don't mean to diminish that. But we pretty quickly realized that the neighborhoods we were working in had incredibly strong community relationships.
Already,
yeah, well in place. We weren't introducing neighbors to one another, you know, and we'd have classes and sometimes people would meet each other, but more often than not, it was people who go back a long ways and maybe hadn't seen each other in a while, but were already sort of connected in deep ways. And so for us, there was a pretty quick pivot to get that kind of language out of our proposal, since, you know, that's not what we're doing. Really, I think what we've been lucky in that regard, because the strength of that community relationship actually enhances our programs in a way that we wouldn't be able to influence. So to give you kind of a specific example of that, you know, we have these backyard gardens, and I think an initial critique might be, oh well, you know, it's serving the individual, but you know, it's not a community garden, it's not a school garden, it's not sort of serving these public spaces. But what we learned in as part of our program evaluation, anecdotally, but also with some study, is that the average participant in our program shares their produce with 9 different people, which for us was like an absolutely astonishing number. And it's been confirmed over a number of years. And so this is a real thing. And again, anecdotally, it does bear true. I mean, produce from people's gardens are going to churches, it's going to school, it's going to work, it's going to neighbors, it's going to friends. And that's really, I think, kind of the perfect vision of this program, is that food is produced locally and shared amongst neighbors, not food distributed as some sort of like act of service or from the food bank or from an outside organization, but grown and shared by community members and shared with people that they love and care about. And so that's not something we could do. Like, we wouldn't be able to do that without just like the natural community and connections of the participants in our program. And so I guess to your question of what I've thought about community, for us, it's just about recognizing it and valuing it and seeing it as the incredible asset that it is, and finding ways that our program can like continue to support and like participate in that vibrant community.
No, thank you for saying that, and for, you know, kind of clarifying the fact that that community already exists, and, you know, homegrown is just sort of, you know, existing within that, not trying to create something new. Because I don't know if you've ever grown tomatoes, but I'm sure that, you know, homegrown grows much more than tomatoes. But if you've ever grown tomatoes, there are somehow way more than you could have ever anticipated.
That's what I'm saying, Hannah. And that's the beautiful thing about gardening, too. I mean, how many of our hobbies, how many of our leisure pastimes result in something that we are like eager to share with other people? There are some out there, but it's something that's really special and unique about gardening. And it's one of the things I love about it.
No, I absolutely do. And I'm, like I said, I'm new to the area, so I'm very excited to have the space to do that now. But even if you don't know somebody, I feel like if you have, you know, a surplus of a type of produce, if for some chance in these communities you don't know your neighbor, you'll learn your neighbor really quickly if you're trying to save food from going bad. Which would definitely, you know, encourage me to be like, knock on some doors and be like, hey, I have all these tomatoes I grew, would you like some? So I think that that's, I think that gardening is, a really special way to share community. And I think that, you know, homegrown sort of adding to the definition of community and not, you know, changing it is something really important. Awesome. So kind of on the same lines, what has the, you know, in the communities that you've been in, what has the community response been to homegrown?
Yeah. I would say when we first sort of come into a community. We start offering this service in a community. At first, because we're sort of new, and maybe it seems like almost too good to be true, I think there is a little bit of hesitation, or it starts slow. Let's put it that way. It starts slow, but there's always been early adopters. People who say, yeah, I'll give that a try, or I'll trust you to do this. Or,
well, if there's no risk for the person that's getting it. So, yeah. You know,
absolutely. And really, I mean, it's a great deal, but it's like, even then it's like, people are a little like, they just don't know you. And,
I want strangers coming into my yard?
Absolutely. Are there strings attached that you're not saying, or
yes.
Just, you know, and that's understandable. But you know, there always are some early adopters, and, really the way that we get the majority of our new applicants is through word of mouth, is through,
I was going to ask that, actually.
Yeah. I mean, we do some, you know, we will set up at events, you know, so we'll do some tabling. But a lot of it is neighbors telling neighbors or friends telling friends. They had a good experience with this. And so a lot of the calls we get are say, hey, I saw this garden at my neighbor's house, or I saw this garden at my sister's house, and I'm interested as well. And so overall, the community response has been really great. And, you know, we've, at this point, since 2013, we've installed just over 350 backyard gardens, and
that's like 60 a summer, right? I think I read that about.
Yeah, it's honestly, it has, it's gone up and down depending on funding, depending on staffing. Our sort of maximum in a year is 60. That's the most we can sort of install and feel like we can provide meaningful support to. And when we first get into a neighborhood, we'll maybe do, you know, 10 or 15 to start. You know, we never want to like set goals beyond our ability to sort of work at the speed of relationships.
Yeah.
You know, cause
that's
like
a good way to put it.
We don't want to twist arms, and we don't want to sort of go on an aggressive marketing campaign. We like it when it can grow naturally, where people are sort of finding out about us and excited about us and excited about their opportunity to garden.
No, I think that what you said working at the speed of community, which I think is like really valid, especially when a bunch of strangers, yeah. You know, are coming in and being like, hey, we're going to give you this for free, for nothing. All you have to do is, you know, just be willing to, you know, take this on. And then, you know, it's obviously the obligation of, are you willing to, you know, care for it after, you know, season after season. And I think that you worded it really nicely, working at the speed of community.
Yeah. And I will say one of the things we've been fortunate in sort of the design of our program, I think one area that a number of urban ag ventures can run into some community resistance is oftentimes around land ownership. You know, it's sort of if groups coming in and wants to occupy a space and own a space and develop a space, even if the intentions are great, I think sometimes there are hesitations around who controls land in a community. And because we operate in backyard spaces on private property, and because it's 100% voluntary, I mean, you know,
yeah.
Then we've been able to sort of sidestep a lot of the reasonable concerns around some other kind of urban ag activities.
Well, and also like if a person is, I just thought of this, if a person is renting a property, that also might make it hard for them, you know, to be able to take advantage of this. Like if a landlord, for example, doesn't want somebody altering a space, which is valid if someone isn't going to be living in an area very long. I mean, in my opinion, that would increase the property value, but I'm sure that there are some people where it could, instead of it being, you know, something to increase the property value, it could just turn into a liability. So I can also see that to be a potential roadblock if people are, you know, renting properties as opposed to, you know, it being their own land.
It's true. And we do work with renters. We do need the landlord to agree. And in some cases, it's just sort of like you're saying, in some cases, the landlord is like gung-ho about it and happy to have it and welcome, you know, happy for the resource. And in other cases, they don't see it as a fit with their property. And so in those situations, we do our best to guide people towards community garden spaces. But that can be a barrier.
Yeah, no, that's a shame. I mean, I get it, but I always wish that wasn't the case. So kind of on the same lines, mm-hmm. as far as like community is concerned, my next question is, so from what I can see from the promotional videos, the homegrown staff and volunteers are largely white, and the communities you're working in are largely Black communities and communities of color. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's true? And what impact does race have on the homegrown program and the relationships with the communities you work in?
Yeah, it's a valid question. As far as our staff, you know, we've had a variety of staff over the years, so it's not sort of the racial makeup of our staff has varied throughout the course of the program. I do think it's probably fair to say, you know, Phipps Conservatory as a whole is sort of a majority white-led organization. So I think sort of the question stands kind of regardless of our sort of current staff, you know, year to year. I think that fact, paired with the fact that we are not rooted specifically in the communities we're working in, I think puts us at a disadvantage initially. I mean, I think sort of as I was saying earlier, people are a little more hesitant, maybe a little suspicious, worried that there might be some level of exploitation or extractiveness associated with our activities. I think it makes things a little slower. And as a program, I think the way we have, I mean, to some extent, we try to address it through hiring. I mean, that's certainly a piece of it.
Yeah. First thing.
That's the first thing. But again, sort of looking even at a bigger picture, as we sort of look, you know, what we represent more broadly, I think there's going to be hesitation kind of regardless. And I think this, the way we combat that is through relationships. And I've said that a few times, and we really put relationships front and center in what we're doing. And I think, you know, it may move a little slower at first, but once people get to know us and, you know, who we are
and what you do, yeah,
what our values are and what we're asking and what we can offer, then I think race becomes less central to the relationship. Yeah. I wouldn't say it disappears, but I think it becomes less central, and we can build really meaningful relationships with people. And so it's there, it's present, it's something that we talk about and something that we try to address in a variety of capacities. But the strongest, you know, sort of the strongest antidote that we've found to be able to do our work successfully is through putting an emphasis on high quality relationships. And that's really, that has bore fruit for us.
And I think another thing that, that I really like about homegrown, where I think it varies, and I say this as you know, a white woman who, like, when I am in other spaces, I try to be very aware of the voice that I put out and, you know, what I'm offering and what I'm putting on the table and making sure that, you know, what I'm doing is, or like what I'm trying to add to the conversation doesn't, you know, turn into something exploitative or, you know, something that isn't really reasonable. But I think one thing that homegrown does really well, from what I can see, and, you know, from everything that I've learned, you know, from our conversation, is the fact that there are applicants who apply to be part of this program. Mm-hmm. And I know you said you did some, you know, community outreach and you do some tabling, at events, but I think that the word of mouth also kind of combats, you know, maybe many of those negative feelings. And that was actually one of my favorite things that I read about homegrown, when I was, you know, looking at interviewing you and speaking with you, is the fact that people apply to be a part of this program, as opposed to, you know, an organization coming into an area where, you know, people might be suspicious of them because like you said, like why would you do something for free like that? Why would you offer food to people? Why would you offer, like, you know, education and the ability to learn? Because most, you know, institutions, unfortunately, are not like that. So I think that that's a just something really important about Homegrown that I, you know, really admire about the institution. So
I appreciate you saying that, Hannah. And I think some of it for us does also come, some of it comes down to ownership and decision making. And, you know, once, like, you know, we come in and we say, okay, where do you want these beds? And, you know, we try to make sure there's enough sunlight and there's water access. And, you know, we provide, you know, some support in helping make that decision when necessary. But, you know, we do the installation. People have a large selection of vegetables to choose from for what they want to grow. We help with, you know, we help with the planting. And then the garden's theirs. And so it's like, if they decide next year, you know what, they're done growing vegetables, they want to grow flowers, or they hate, you know, they want to let it go for a year, they want to come back, they want to do all kale and sweet potatoes, it's theirs. And so it's not as if we're going to come back and say, you didn't do quite what we were expecting or what you wanted to do, and so we're going to take that back from you. And so I think when you give people ultimately the ability to make their own decisions and the ownership of the beds is really clear, it eases a lot of those tensions.
And like those anxieties around, you know, having been given something like that. I think that also clarifying that is, you know, really important, as far as like letting them know that it is theirs and that there's no obligation, you know, there's no obligation attached to it, other than, do you want this or do you not? And if you don't want it, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of similarly, have you at all had to grapple with, you know, the white savior complex? And if so, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah. I mean, I see it all. I mean, I see it all the time. I've certainly participated in that through varying parts of my professional career. It's something that we do talk pretty explicitly about as a team, and with anyone new we bring onto the team. That really, I mean, even apart from race, that we're just not really there to save anybody. I mean, these are gardens, and these are, we think, special things, sources of joy, you know, sort of a connection to the natural world, a connection to more fresh produce. But I think for starters, we are humble about what the implications of this are. I mean, ultimately, we're putting a backyard garden. You know, we also, as a team, continuously sort of recognize all of the creativity and knowledge and skill sets of the participants we're working with. And so it's like, it becomes, the more you work in the field, the more apparent it becomes sort of pretty quickly that, you're not the expert and that there's a ton of wisdom out there and we're all just kind of figuring it out as we go. But I will say, you know, I think one approach, one frame that I try to view things through as far as what our role is, because, you know, we do think we have a role to play, is, you know, we are a preeminent botanic garden for Western Pennsylvania. And as such, I want to serve all the participants of our region. And that looks different ways for different audiences. It's not gonna look and feel the same way for everyone. And so we have a wide variety of programming. I'm hopeful that Homegrown is relevant and useful to folks, and to the extent that it is, it will be successful. And to the extent that it isn't, we'll have to develop new things to be in service to our region. So for me, you know, it's not so much about trying not to put an emphasis on being a white savior, so much as just like a strong horticultural resource that people can connect to and enhance whatever their own vision for their future is through gardening and plants.
No, thank you for that. That I think that when we sort of put ourselves in communities where, you know, we might not have experience, I feel I feel like there can, you know, almost be this defensive nature that we take a lot of times if we, and you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier in the conversation where you were talking about like community and how, you know, as a sense of like growing community and how you go into this area and that community already exists. Homegrown doesn't need to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and then going back to the question that you just answered, I think that when you mentioned, you know, people come in with their own, they, a lot of times you're learning from them. And so I think that, you know, just kind of remembering that, and probably one of my favorite things, or favorite sayings that I, you know, have in my mind most days is kind of meeting people where they are. And, you know, sometimes that means that you don't need to say anything. And, you know, like sometimes it requires you to, you know, kind of do something more in a conversation, but there's also a lot of times where you don't need to do anything. Like you said, you're there to put in gardens and you're there to, you know, learn and talk with people. And I think that, you know, we're not there to save anybody. And I think that when people are willing to, you know, let you into their space and let you into their community, I think that it kind of takes that. And I also think you mentioned humility. And I think that those are really important things to remember when you're coming into a space that you're not familiar in. And, you know, people are looking at you and you're just trying to, you know, put in some garden beds and, you know, learn from them. So thank you.
And I think that comes back to relationships too. I mean, the more like, one of the things I like about gardening is I do think it is something that is easy to talk about across, it's easy for people to talk about even when they come from different cultures, because it's, you know, I mean, like gardening is in a lot of people's histories, or you can talk about the weather or you can talk, you know, you sort of share the same bugs or, you know, there's like, there are like enough kind of similarities that even if you're not sure what to talk to someone about, like gardening is kind of a nice bridge in some ways. And food, absolutely. and so for me, you know, I think gardening's a great, it is a relationship builder. And once you're in that relationship and you find out what people are, like a lot of people are trying to activate things in their own lives. And so the more you can have a conversation with them, get to know them and see, okay, well, like based on our resources and our skill set, like here's how we think we can help you, you know, achieve what you're trying to achieve. And so that's where, I mean, it comes, it's humility. It's also listening and it's relationships. And because, you know, again, for us, we're proud of our work as a botanic garden and want to make sure that it's that resource is felt by everyone, not just sort of a certain subset of the region.
No, and you're right. It is all about relationships. That is kind of what this whole conversation comes down to is relationships and the importance of those in community. And so what are some of the most positive outcomes you've seen from Homegrown? And kind of along with this, what's something that you're very proud of, Homegrown? Like what aspects of Homegrown are you most proud of?
Yeah. I think I'd mentioned a stat earlier, the number, you know, the average gardener in our program shares their harvest with 9 different people. That's something that I'm just really, it's not even anything we're doing. It's just something that I like, am really proud of for the program kind of as a whole, like a sort of sub outcome of the program. We have an incredibly hardworking staff. I mean, to get 350 gardens in the ground, and we do check-in visits with everyone. We follow, we make calls to everyone. I just am really proud at the amount of relationship building and hard work that it took to get the gardens into people's backyards. A couple of things that maybe are a little bit outside of our core programming, but that I'd like to point to. A few years ago, we started working with the Homewood Brushton YMCA, and now we help manage their community garden. They have a garden space at the Homewood YMCA, and that's been a really special relationship. We'd always had a relationship with the YMCA. We'd host our classes there. They'd help promote the program. But
Like for the applicants, like the classes would be at the Y, like for, okay, like
exactly.
for the participating. Okay.
Yeah, and actually it could be for anyone. We'd promote it, it was promoted to our homegrown participants. Really, it was free and open to anyone interested in gardening classes. So we had monthly classes at the Homewood YMCA. And so we had we've done that since 2013. So that's been a long-standing relationship there. But like I said, just about 4 years ago, we did take over sort of primary management of their garden space. And so that relationship has been really strong, and we've been able to we've had a couple of big garden celebrations in that space. YMCA summer camp kids and after school kids can get into that space, and so we're doing good things there, and I'm excited to see that grow. The other thing we do through Homegrown outside of our neighborhoods, but sort of at a city scale, is we have an annual seed swap. So it's called our Celebration of Seeds, and we host it at the Carnegie Library in Oakland every year. And pre-pandemic, when we had sort of hit our height, we were having about 750 people come through in about 4 hours, all just getting free seeds, sharing seeds, learning about gardening. And it was just like we'd run in late February, early March, and it was just it was a real community builder. For sort of just like, when people are kind of itching to get into the garden, but not quite there, and kind of dreaming about the season, it's been really special. And we've had to be either virtual or sort of run like kind of alternate versions of the program the past couple of years. But we're really excited in 2023, we're going to be back at the Carnegie Library in Oakland on March 4th. So excited for that event, and proud of what we've been able to grow. We run that in partnership with the Carnegie Library, as well as Grow Pittsburgh, who is an amazing partner on the event.
So basically, what you're saying is March 4th, everybody get their seeds ready. Everybody get your seeds ready. That is really cool. I actually didn't know about that. So that's just another, I guess, community building exercise. That's awesome.
You should definitely, if you're around Hannah, you should definitely come. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have many seeds. I actually have some pawpaws, some
Oh,
pawpaw
cool.
seeds that I've saved from this year. Was actually my first year ever trying a pawpaw. I've lived on the East Coast for my entire life, and I know that they're indigenous to, this area. And I saved some because I was like, I don't know when I'm gonna grow this. I live in a rental right now, but we're gonna have our time. So I have little containers of seeds actually in my house that I've
And I should
saved.
say, you would be awesome to bring those. I will say, even though it's called a swap, you do not need to bring anything. We have so many seeds that we give away. It's just like it's really just a celebration of kind of the start of the gardening season.
Oh man, that's really cool. Okay, so everybody, it's a Carnegie Library.
Yep, Carnegie Library in Oakland. It's on
March
Saturday, March
4th.
4th. Yep.
Okay, everybody get ready. So I guess this is also related. But what growth do you see for homegrown in the future? No pun intended.
So for us, we've been in Homewood since 2013, sort of the greater Homewood area. So Homewood, but also Larmer, Lincoln, Leamington, East Hill, sort of the area neighborhood surrounding Homewood. And it's been terrific there, and we've built a lot of good relationships, and we're going to continue in that space, both with the YMCA as well as other programming. But we are just beginning to shift. This past year to expand our program to Hazelwood.
Oh, wow.
So excited for that. And so as far as growth, I mean, certainly over the next few years, we're going to be growing relationships in the Hazelwood community, and are starting that started that this past year. There's some really great institutions there, including Community Kitchen Pittsburgh, which I'm excited to work with. They're a culinary training program and have a really, a cafe and a training site there in Hazelwood.
So what type of stuff will you be doing? Will you be doing with them, like as far as collaboration?
I
If
mean,
you can share it, if you can share it.
it's early stages, so I can't guarantee it, but we are going to be looking to do some live cooking, demos and classes with them. Because for us, I think we've done a really good job with the gardening side of things. That's really what we know best. But we've also, you know, we know that cooking and eating is a big part of the gardening experience as well. And so looking to continue to grow that aspect of things. Phipps does have a really amazing teaching kitchen on campus. And so we've begun really over the last probably 3 years to add more cooking classes to the homegrown offerings. But just in general, I think an area for growth for us is to continue to offer more on the cooking side of things as we develop gardeners, having those really go hand in hand.
Yeah, I think that's, I think that's a really good idea. Because I can't tell you the amount of times I've seen, you know, a piece of produce at the store, let alone that I've grown. And I've been like, I have no idea how to cook that. I have no idea what that is supposed to look like cooked. I have no idea what that feels like raw. And so I think that, you know, being able to offer cooking classes for food, you know, like, hey, you grew this. Do you want to know what you can do with it? Because food is very versatile if you give it the chance. And I feel like, especially if you're used to seeing food a very particular way, it makes it hard to, you know, see it in any other way. If that makes sense. Like if you only know tomatoes as, you know, tomato sauce. And I can't think of any other things right now, but there's a lot of things that you can do with tomatoes that, you know, aren't necessarily in a sauce, but you can cook them in the oven and roast them and all types of stuff.
And that's so exactly it, Hannah. I think for us, there's sort of a couple of things. I mean, part of it is exposure. It's just like, oh, right. I've never tasted this, or I didn't know you could prepare it that way, or I didn't realize, I could use that pot that way. Or like, there's sort of like, there is just pure, straight, you know, exposure to all the different ways we can prepare vegetables and eat them in beautiful and delicious ways. And then there's also there's kitchen skill building. I think as a society, we've lost a lot of cooking skills. And so, just building knife skills, building sautéing skills, giving people a better sense of baking best practices, just building some general kitchen skills, we hope gives people more confidence in the kitchen because this is true for me too. I mean, when you're short on time and you're tired, it's like, that's when we're more likely to not eat the things that we really should be eating or want to eat, but we sort of go to convenience foods. And so the more confidence we can build in people, like, oh, I can whip together something quickly because I know how to do it. I've seen it done. I've built those skills.
I've done it before. No, I think that is a really good point, especially in this society. I feel like we are almost taught that if we take that time to do things, that we could be doing something else or something more productive. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, I actually have a rule with myself. I work pretty much full time, and I'm also in graduate school, but I make a promise with myself that I will cook myself at least one good meal, and I'll eat that meal, you know, four or five times that week, but I will make myself, you know, one or two good meals. And when I say good, I don't mean, you know, they taste good, but you know, they have nutritional value to them. And, I will cook one meal where I will like take the time to actually do it. And if it's the one thing that I do for myself that day, it is, you know, being able to cook just one thing that is good for me and, you know, makes me feel good. Because I think the other thing with convenience food is sometimes we can't help it. Sometimes a frozen pizza is just a frozen pizza and it does what it needs to do. But I don't always feel the best after I eat that. And so I think that we just get into a circle or a cycle of, you know, not eating great, but then not having time to cook and then not feeling great. So we rush from thing to thing. So I think that having those skills is important.
And just to pull it back to gardening for a minute, one of the outcomes that we have seen, again, I don't know that we would have fully predicted this in the early years when we were more about you know, in those early grant days of community building and fresh food access, we weren't really talking about the sort of health and wellness benefits of the act of gardening. And it was something that just came pouring out of people as part of our evaluations. It was, you know, apart from the produce that they got, it was time spent in the garden when they could be by themselves, when it was peaceful, they could do it, you know, they did it in the morning or sort of right after work or whenever it was. That was something that we heard very loudly, that the act of gardening itself was something that sort of helped calm people down and center them and make them feel better. And so we're pleased about that. We're you know, it's something certainly I feel in the garden, and I'm glad other people are feeling it as well. And I think the same can be said of cooking also. It is more, gardening sort of forces you to slow down, whereas cooking you can kind of race through. Along with giving people the skill sets in the kitchen, I hope we're also encouraging people to use it as a time to slow down, to reconnect with your senses, because there's, you know, you can get into almost a Zen state or a flow state cooking, and that's really valuable time. And so I think seeing it that way, recognizing it as an act of self-care, is a message that we're excited to help cultivate.
Yeah, and I think that that's just an unexpected, like you said, it's an unexpected, you know, benefit of being able to grow your own food, because you also want to, you know, if it's something that you grew, it's something that you want to take care of, and you don't want to just kind of just throw it somewhere and throw it in the pan. Like if you grew those tomatoes, since we've been talking about tomatoes for the last, you know, 45 minutes, you want to cut those tomatoes nicely. You want to be nice to them, and, you know, treat them like you grew them, which you did.
Yeah.
Well, it makes it taste better. That's the love part of it that's in it. That's what goes into it. But before we end, I just wanted to say thank you again for taking the time to, you know, talk with me about homegrown and talk with me about gardening and food and FIPS. And I've really appreciated you taking the time. Before I ask you, if you have any final words you'd like to share.
The one thing I didn't say that I intended to, and I'll share now, is another thing I like about gardening, and that I'm proud of in our program, is that I do think backyard gardens are a great place for different generations to connect in the garden. And we see a lot of grandparents gardening with grandchildren in our spaces. Sometimes young parents of young children are too busy for our gardens, but the grandparents find it to be really valuable. And gardening, like art or making music, is something that you can practice over a lifetime. And the things you can share with your grandchildren is really relevant. So I just, you know, if you have someone in your life, a grandparent, someone from a different generation in your life, I'd recommend asking them about their garden experience, their connection to growing spaces. It could be a farm, because, you know, there's a lot of family heritage built into these spaces. And so I'd like to make sure a lot of that gets passed along to the next generation.
Well, yeah, and I feel like our generation, I feel like we're similar enough in age that I can say that. But I feel like our generation has kind of lost the, you know, that connection to nature in that way. I personally didn't grow up with a garden. I grew up with access to nature, and I grew up with access to green spaces, but I didn't really grow up with that connection to food. And there are plenty of people in my life who did grow up with that, but I know more who didn't than did. Let me just say that. And I think that being able to reconnect with that, and like you said, just being able to, you know, ask people in your family what their connection to growing food is. Because I feel like, again, it's a very recent connection that we've lost. And so I think that gardening can be a way to, you know, get it back. and you know, have some of that connection, you know, with your family, with the earth, with food. So thank you for sharing that. That's very special.
And thank you for having me. It's been nice talking to you.
Thank you. It's been very nice talking to you. And again, this is Gabe Tylove and Hannah Horsemeyer. Thank you so much for being with us today.